you have a talk coming up in Copenhagen. It would be great if you could talk a little bit about that as well. So maybe, Dan, if you could start off.
Sure. So you said RDF or Hydra stuff primarily. We probably have more to talk about on Hydra, but try to keep it within some of the more relevant stuff that we're doing. We've been a Hydra partner at Penn State for 4 years about now, and we actually were pretty fortunate in that we didn't have an institutional repository. And I say that in the sense of we're fortunate because I'm of the philosophy that it's easier to build something from scratch than it is to, you know, we didn't have to deal with other sort of metadata systems that we were migrating over or away from. So there was really none of that we had to deal with. And I honestly, from talking with other people, I believe that's probably the biggest obstacle or challenge that a lot of people face rather than just putting something up. So when we were starting from scratch in 2012, our metadata format, or you know, that we went with is essentially we implemented Dublin Core with RDF in like a text file, basically. And it was very simplistic. At that point, we were just putting out really an institutional repository for things like preprints, images. It was file agnostic, I guess, as we'd like to say. It was self-deposit, not mediated deposit. So anybody could, you know, anyone who had a Penn State Access ID had access to the system. And really, we made those decisions because we just wanted to make sure that we could allow people in as much as we can, as opposed to trying to shoehorn different things. We were trying to be as open as we could with file types that we're using, and rather than being constrained or dogmatic about our decisions, those seem to be the most open. And so we've had ScholarSphere around for, you know, like 4 years now. We've also put out an additional Hydra Head ArchivesSphere, which is really very small, doesn't even have a public face to it. It's for our digital records archivists, and it's built off of the same technology that Hydra's built off of. It doesn't have any real, it doesn't have any deep-seated metadata assumptions or anything like that. I would say one of the biggest things that we had to deal with in our initial design was, and this was more about the way that we wanted to store things, we stored the values instead of the URIs, which is something that, you know, we kind of still go back and go and wonder if that was the right decision. But it was always something that we didn't, you weigh the pros and cons, eventually you just got to make a decision, kind of live with it. And then as Fedora, when Fedora 4 came out, we decided in the late summer, early fall of 2014 to be a beta tester of Fedora 4. It didn't have as much to do with the fact of like going to an RDF or going to like LDP or anything like that. It really had to do with the fact that we were running into size constraints on Fedora 3 with our files. That was really the big motivating factor. It was a couple things. We were running into size constraints, and we figured anything that we built at this point in September of 2014, functionality-wise, if we didn't build it on Fedora 4, we would have to rebuild it when we moved to Fedora 4. So it just seemed kind of, not to be cavalier, it seemed silly to invest our time to put out functionality to move to Fedora 4, to put out functionality when we knew it would have to be rewritten because the back end was going to be changing so dramatically. And so we just decided because we weren't dealing with terabytes of data like some places have to deal with, it was a simpler thing where we were able to migrate to Fedora 4, and we were able to test our migrations many, many times. You know, some people, if you have a lot of data, you know, you can test a part of it, or you can test it once, you know, just because the logistics of migrating that data is going to be, I don't know, days or something. You know, for us, it was like, hey, we can test this, and, you know, everyone go get a cup of coffee, and we'll come back, and we can see how things are working, or what happened. So it made a lot of sense for us to do that. And that was really the driving factor, so that then as we were building additional features and functions to Scholar Sphere, they were on top of Fedora 4. And we've just kind of been moving in that direction. And I have quickly used up my 5 minutes. But hopefully that's a quick overview. We're also now, we actually are in the process of building a new ETD system that I mentioned that's actually not a Hydra head and not using RDF, so why am I talking about it? But I think eventually we are going to move it into that direction. It's just more a matter of trying to get off existing old technologies, getting them onto these new technologies, and maybe in a bit of reverse order, we're going to put the underneath, put that lower layer in there when we can do it. But it's just really important for us to migrate off of our existing platform.
No, that's great. Thank you, Dan.
Sure.
And so, Christina.
Okay. Hi, I'm Christina. So I do metadata work at Cornell. And I start with that because I've only been at Cornell maybe 5 months. And the first week I was here, one of our digital collections developers was saying, hey, we have to migrate all this stuff from DLXS to Hydra. We're using Fedora 3 currently. Do we want to go ahead and migrate to Fedora 4 to avoid migrating and then having to migrate again in the near future? And I was like, heck yeah, let's do it. So slightly different context. And I need to say that, like, as much as I can understand some of the architecture, I'm not a developer, I'm a metadata person who's trying to help with migration of data to a digital collections instance of Hydra using curation concerns. Using HydraWorks or PCMWorks, as it's being called now, and a couple different other extensions. So it's slightly different context from what Dan's discussing. There are instances of Sufia with RDF, so Sufia 7 and Fedora 4 development going on at Cornell. That's not really, I'm aware of it. That's more Lynette Rails area. So I'm not talking about self-deposit IRs, talking about digital collections. We have a Hydra instance running now for our digital collections platform that's built off Fedora 3 and Hydra. We started migrating DLXS stuff to it. We also have where some shared shell stuff gets punted right to the Solr index so that it has a unified discovery, but it's not actually in Fedora. We're migrating now our DLXS stuff to Fedora 4 and PCDM, and within PCDM, we are using the PCDM works model as being rewritten by Rob Sanderson and the Hybox models and all of that stuff going on. So we can talk and gossip and debate about the HydraWorks, PCDMWorks modeling changes going on right now. But we're in the thick of that. Something else we're trying to think. So when we were deciding whether or not to go to Fedora 4 versus stay with Fedora 3 and migrate again in a year, we decided we wanted to go with Fedora 4, and we decided RDF for our descriptive metadata. So in Fedora 4, you could still just load your XML metadata and have it handled in a different way. We decided to go with RDF because we didn't want to slow down, and this was more my bailiwick, I didn't want to slow down the migration process while I was doing metadata enhancements. I've seen too many migration processes die because they're waiting for metadata to finish updating stuff. So what we're doing is we're doing basic mapping to PCDM on a collection by collection basis, because it's all kinds of crazy from DLXS, and we're loading into Fedora 4 straight RDF, descriptive metadata is all RDF. And then I'm actually using the Fedora 4, Sparkle update endpoint to do batch editing. And it's this whole Python RDF library, like set of scripts. It's kind of nuts, but I can do batch updating. So and we wouldn't have been able to do that if we had stored the descriptive metadata as XML, because then I'd have to go in and pull down the whole XML file and do my updates and then push the whole XML file back. That's where we're at. We don't have the Fedora 4 digital collections repository in production yet, but we've got a development instance up, and it hasn't broken yet in the latest iteration, so this is good. Some of the considerations, we're doing our migration in stages, so I am doing some batch updates to the RDF data as it goes in, trying to make sure we have assessment scripts to check that PCDM modeling is working the way we think it should be working. So it has the predicates we're looking for, it's being typed correctly, et cetera, et cetera. We're doing some basic, I'm doing some basic metadata batch updating, you know, adding formats where there weren't formats, trying to strip random HTML characters from abstracts, that kind of thing. We are storing literals instead of URIs for a lot of the predicates that expect resources, not literals. So someone from Boston saw our documentation and dinged me on that. And I was like, okay, this is part of a plan. But what we're hoping is once we get the production, well, once we get this instance in production and standing up, then we can discuss one entity matching for those strings to URIs, which we're ready to do. But two, more importantly, what kind of infrastructure we need to build so that they can do efficient caching of those URIs to get the things needed for the solar index, which then feeds into the discovery. And it's not necessarily, I mean, it's a question that other Hydra partners are working on, but it's not one we want to bog down our migration process with, because we have enough trouble just getting the DLXS structure converted to PCDM and getting the ingest file or the ingest scripts working. That said, I'm trying to think, some of the considerations we're really interested in going forward is how this digital collection stack is going to interact with our like our digital assets archival storage, which will probably be Fedora 4 in the near future. So how do you store those things? How do you archive it? How do you link it to digital archive copies? That sort of, those sorts of questions. We are working on a Vitro instance. So Vitro is the semantic triple store and semantic web editor, semantic data editor that underlies Vivo. We're using Vitro instances right now to build local authorities negotiation. So I know negotiation is a loaded word, especially with both developers and non-developers in the room. Basically, we want to have local URIs for our various authorities and then just query that so that we can build out same-as relationships or handle things that maybe aren't in the Library of Congress or those sorts of questions. And that's something we're actively developing as a pilot right now. So we would like our digital collections to interact with that in some way. And we're also part of the LD for L, LD for P, Linked Data for Everyone efforts, which means we're doing BibFrame 2 instance or data creation in another Vitro instance. And we're starting to wonder about how we're going to link PCDM objects and our digital collections Hydra with BibFrame 2 items. So that's where we're at. Oh, in Copenhagen. Oh, yeah. So, sorry. ELAG is European Libraries Automation Group. It's a really good conference over in Europe. I went last year. It just introduced me to a lot of technology that's going on over there that maybe you don't hear about over here because you sort of get an echo chamber in different regions and in different communities. I was thinking about doing something about how, like, for me to get to my understanding now of how PCDM is working and what we need to do with it, I had to dig through a lot of Ruby code. I'm not a developer. I'm not a Rubyist. If I was to choose something, it'd be Python. So like, I wanted to give a presentation to other metadata people to be like, this is what I figured out, and let's like talk together and improve the documentation around it. The community supports improving documentation. It's just everyone's already so busy. It turned into a workshop thing. We're going to see where it goes. I've gotten a couple of European developers already pinging me to be like, but I like XML, but I really like METS. So I'm trying to prepare myself for that. The idea was to give developers an idea of what metadata people are going on about when they're trying to figure out what PCDM is and how they prepare themselves for actually the descriptive metadata going into Fedora. As well as here, let's peel away all the layers. So what is curation concerns? What is HydraWorks? What is LDP? What is PCDM? How does this all interact? Where does this affect you? Where does this not affect you? Those sorts of questions. So that's Copenhagen.
Ah. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
So I guess the best thing to do now is just open it up for questions.
looking at some of my notes that I was taking, I think, Christina, you might have touched on this a little bit, but Dan, and both of you, if you could weigh in, I'm curious what other vocabularies you're using. So you talked about PCDM, but I don't know if there's other things you're using. And Dan, I'm not sure if there are any specific vocabularies for RDF that you're using.
I guess I'll go first. We're using the Library of Congress subject headings. Mm-hmm. We're using, I always say GeoCities, that like 1995 Yahoo like website creator for geolocation, for geosites, for locations and states and stuff like that. But actually, I think that's really all that we're using right now for standardized vocabularies. And when we've talked more about that, what people want here are more standardized vocabularies, like specific to Penn State, like departments and users, like things that we didn't. We kind of went big on it, and actually, what people want is really the help on the localized stuff, because that's what helps them find things specific to other colleagues at the university. We're just using two. We might have another one that I can't remember right now, but I think we have two or three different standard vocabs that we're using.
And that's the geonames, is that?
Yeah, geonames. Okay. I see cities again. A second. Yeah. Time. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, geonames.
Okay. I just want to make sure I got my notes right. Cool. And Christina, I don't know if you have, I mean, I know you're mentioning.
I'm going to try to avoid the rabbit hole here, but we use PCDM for our object modeling. Mm-hmm. And we use Hydra, well, PCDM works on top of it. We, for vocabularies, okay, so for predicates, we pull them from a number of namespaces. We're using everything from Vivo to the Europeana data model to a lot of DC and DC terms. I'm trying to think of some other ones that have been pulled in specifically for descriptive meta, the Mark Relator code terms, which are available as RDF from id.loc.gov. Although I think we're using RDA unconstrained for properties right now, and or for like role terms, so anything beyond creator and contributor. For the actual vocabularies that those values, those objects are from, this is sort of an ongoing question. I know that Hydra in a Box, which is, I talk with some of the people involved with modeling stuff a little bit, to see, and I poke at their documentation peek at their documentation quite a bit to see what's going on there. They're taking a stance where they're going to model some of these sort of context class resources or entities in the Fedora instance behind Hydra in a Box itself. So you have a Foth agent, I think is what they're using for people. And then if that person has an authority, you can link it out to whatever vocabulary you want. And if it doesn't, you're managing it there. I'm hoping that our local Vitro authority store is going to sort of do that work. And then once we have it there, we're going to link it out to our Vivo instance, or like our proper Vivo researcher profile instance. We want those URIs involved. That'll be more important for our institutional repository than for digital collections, but nevertheless. Especially for department names, because that is a nightmare to clean up. Oh my God, department names are so bad. so that, place names, I'm a big fan of geonames, but we haven't really claimed any vocabulary yet. I would like to use geonames or maybe something that we can push that data back to who's on first. I don't know. We'll see where we go with that. That's not been decided yet, because right now people names are pretty pressing. Subject headings are, we're pretty integrated with FAST usage here at Cornell, so they will probably be FAST headings. Most of the other ones are smaller controlled vocabularies that you like, type terms and that kind of thing. I'm happy to share all my documentation with our migration process that has this a little bit, it has this broken out and has more detail if you really want to read really, really long markdown files in a GitHub repo.
Sounds fun.
That's where we're at.
All right, cool. But no one's using anything like Cydoc, CRM.
Oh, God, no. We're not using, no. I, I've seen where Rob Sanderson started working on a BibFrame 2 to CDOC CRM or CIDOC. Oh, wow. I always say things incorrectly, so I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
He's starting to map those out a bit, and I'm aware of it because we are using some Europeana data model predicates, and often there are subproperties of some CRM terms. So I'm vaguely aware of it, but we're not linking to it in any meaningful way right now. That might happen when we migrate our shared shelf stuff, because that tends to be more of the digitized art.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I have a question for both of you. So you both talked about storing the strings, but not the URI. And I think that kind of relates to a question or sort of a problem that I have with the whole thing with RDF in the Hydra environment, which is that I understand having the URI with the value, but at the end of the day, it's the value in the Solr document that actually is going to create the discovery. And so I'm curious if you have any thoughts about the future of that and how that sort of relates to any decisions that you've made around RDF.
Dan, is it okay if I go or? Okay. I don't want to butt in line, so. I feel you on that. One of the things I can bring to it is that for our main discovery layer right now, which includes, you know, the main part being our catalog discovery layer, it's a Blacklight instance with Solr behind it. It has Voyager data being fed into it. We're already talking now in separate groups about how to get URIs in that. And the URIs would help with a lot of the batch linking and batch update processing. This sort of goes into a completely different direction, but we'll be migrating our ILS in the next 2 years and seems pretty committed. We're going to Olay 2. Olay 2 doesn't really exist, but Olay doesn't have any authority control module that I'm aware of. So we're wondering if URIs can help us with that in some way. And that's sort of part of that like authority store vitro project over there. Where this affects our Hydra stacks is if we can leverage that those same functionalities to do authority control for our URIs and Hydra stacks, we would want to do that. And what it means is that for our Solr process or Solrizing, getting into Solr and then the documents or the actual strings captured there, you're absolutely right that that's where the discovery happens, but we might be able to stuff in some alternate labels, alt label, pref label. We might be able to get some here are other spellings, here are transliterations, that sort of stuff as we build out our same as relationships, which I feel like is the real crux right now, how we're going to build out that this URI here really is this URI in Wikidata, really is this URI in NAF or whatever. It will help us with our main discovery layer. We want to have where someone can click on a name and it shows you, you know, the abstract from Wikidata and like a thumbnail of the person if it exists. That's something we're already discussing for our main discovery layer. For our Hydra stack, for our digital collections, we would hope that that sort of work would spill over into that interface as well. But something I work on a lot is how we link all of the URIs. So how do we do reconciliation? I don't know if that answered your question, but that's where we're at.
It answered me.
For us, a lot like we've never seen it as a tremendous problem as long as we actually feel confident that we can reconstruct the URI, right? Like until we're starting to give people multiple options in these like standard vocabularies or stuff that we're trying to do, we've just thought, well, if we really need it, we could go make it again. You know, like if there's something, if we wanted it at this point for anything further than the discovery layer, then we have to figure out how we're going to expose it to our users and percolate that up. And we just haven't done anything where, you know, really the some of the examples that Christina was giving, which we'd love to be able to do, we just haven't gotten to the point where we're exposing that kind of link data to our users where it would really where we'd really get the benefit of it. And that's, to be honest, why we made the decision to go with the literal was like the quickness of just being able to display really what the user wants to see. We'll just keep it like this, and until we need to, we're just gonna keep punting.
To be fair, so I said that I'm a new hire at Cornell. I'm actually a new position, and part of my position, as I understand it, was we'd really like to leverage all this stuff, but we have no one to do that sort of data work. So hi, I'm that data work. Yeah. It's part of my job is to try to figure out that stuff that others have been punting on because it's complicated.
So sort of as a follow-up to that, I wonder if either you can speak to metadata editing interfaces for generating this RDF metadata. I'm so, you know, you mentioned a lot of this is just being done, it's enhancement work and you're migrating existing metadata. And so it sounds like a really Herculean task that you're undertaking and doing all these things. But what about going forward after that migration's done? And yeah, Dan also at Penn State, how are you guys handling that?
I made a face because one of the things we need is an editor. So we decided to go with the curation concerns, Jim, to extend our digital collections Hydra stack because one of the things that it includes is an editor.
Okay, I didn't know that.
It's in development, but it's there. Okay. I haven't tested it terribly much because I'm not really part of the group asking for it. So the people who need the editors are really like the collection specialists or the subject specialists who are like, this item has a typo.
Right.
I know that it's a typo. I want to log in and fix it. So it's really, it's one of the, like, we have to have this working before we can get this in production. So the developers are working on it. I know that they've got something up as a test case from that curation concerns, Jim. I haven't messed with it terribly much. I want to be able to do the mapping and the assessment and the batch updates. And that's where I've been using the Sparkle over HTTP update patch unicorn request way more probably than they were built for. But that's my interactions with it so far. But yes, an editor is super, super important. I'm a little bit nervous about how the editor is going to interact with the file structures. So we do have to, like, we were using file sets to combine derivatives and masters. Or, you know, here's the image of the file and here's the transcription taken from it, OCR text, that kind of thing. I'm a little bit nervous to know how that's going to interact, but I think for actually editing the objects, the works, which I'm glad that we're thinking about getting rid of HydraWorks works term because it introduces all kinds of other domain assumptions into it. But as for that, I think the editor works okay from what I've heard. Being like freely admitting, I know that it's up, but I don't mess with it a lot.
For us, we've had, a web form. And it's never been great. We developed a batch editing web form, and we've never loved it, to be honest. And the unfortunate thing is the best idea we have been able to come up with internally, although not implement it, is really just trying to get some type of jQuery plugin for a spreadsheet that, you know, over the web would sort of do live AJAX updating of metadata objects. I think some of that also is as much our lack of perhaps some, you know, we're maybe some of our lack of understanding that problem space for the people that are doing it, and then also on top of it, that's what people use now, and the idea of actually having those centrally located, you know, to be updated as opposed to just like spreadsheets on someone's laptop seems like a great step forward in some ways. But I mean, from an interface perspective, that's the best thing we've come up with is a grid, you know. It's not very creative, but that's the best we've. So I would love to see someone else's ideas around that.
Yeah, thank you guys. I was hoping there'd be some, you know, solution that you. But yeah.
Mark, you went to mute.
Keep going back to mute. But yeah, thank you. I didn't even know about the curation concerns. So
yeah, I don't know what the state of it is, but I do know we have it running. Like I know we have it running. I don't know what the state of the editor is, but it's there.
That was just one of my big questions with, yeah, if we're going to RDF for descriptive metadata as well. And not to hog anything, but I would, one quick follow-up question. have you thought about, I mean, do you think RDF suits all your descriptive metadata needs? Or, I mean, that's just, I feel like a lot of the things we basically have in our digital library now is well suited to just being modeled in RDF, but I don't know if that holds true for other things that could be going in there, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. I think RDF, I think RDF is probably working for us for descriptive needs so far. One of the biggest issues I'm running into with working with RDF for descriptive metadata is not necessarily like the fields themselves. Those usually translate pretty easily to some sort of predicate, some sort of property. But more the underlying models, like the underlying domain models. So having our repository objects, and in XML, to be fair, they kind of conflated what I'm going to discuss now. Like they kind of conflated this idea of the description of maybe entity relationship models like Ferberworks or whatever with the actual structure and needs of the repository object in the repository. So getting your METs or whatever and having some descriptive metadata there, and some of it actually applies to the physical resource alone and some of it applies to the digital resource. And how do you link those? Well, we just blur our eyes and put it in there and maybe have a DC source field that links out to a catalog record that has a richer description. So with RDF, we're starting to untangle that a bit. Some of our mapping to PCDM right now retains that conflation of different domain models just because it's repository objects and it's going to take a lot more time and effort to sort of tease those apart. What we do have and what we're building out actively is how to map those repository objects, not map, but how to link them to BibFrame 2 works, because BibFrame is, or LD for L ontology, but probably BibFrame 2 will be what the bulk of our catalog it will be migrating to. It's what we're working on and reviewing actively now. And that will have more of those domain models that I'm talking about sort of get conflated now with the repository objects. So an example would be if you had one of the collections in our digital collections repository is a bunch of books translated into multiple languages, multiple Native American languages. We have the physical books in our archives. The physical books in our archives are described by MARC records, which have all the hallmarks of rare book cataloging. The digital collections records have some of that, but just what was needed to make the DLXS work. We want to be able to meaningfully link that PCDM object that represents this digital surrogate to the BibFrame item, is what it would become in our catalog, which can then build out the relationships to the work. So if someone said, this is really interesting, I want to see it, but I know I can't go see the archival copy, let me go up to the work level and figure out if there's maybe another copy somewhere else. But that combining those models has been interesting. I'm glad to see that Hydra in a Box is thinking about this somewhat, and that other way smarter people are also thinking about it. But back to your original question, RDF seems to be working for us. It's just hard to, the domain modeling is hard to make that work together. Some things you'd hope would be orthogonal or not. Some things you'd hope would map nicely don't. And at least with some of the RDF ontologies coming out now, like BibFrame 2 or even with like CDocs-CRM or other sort of more robust ontologies, they're not falling into the BibFrame 1 trap of trying to replicate XML structure with blank nodes, which was RDF that did not work for us. So it's a process. That's probably the hardest part of it, though. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's where I'm tripping up a lot.
No, yeah, that makes, yeah, that's helpful. I think we're just still, yeah, early on, and I haven't investigated a lot of these things. So that's, yeah, everything you mentioned was very helpful.
Well, BibFrame 2 just came out like this week, so get on it, man. Why aren't you?
Seriously, yeah.
For us, like I sort of as I alluded to earlier, because we're still dealing with new things and not bringing in or migrating things over, it's been fine for us fitting our needs. Like I said, if we get to the point where we're taking something like we have Content DM, for example, that has a lot of objects in it, I think that's where perhaps some of the challenges would present themselves, because things have already been modeled in certain ways. And now how do you change it? How do you make it fit into PCDM and then, you know, represent it in RDF? So we've been okay, but I understand that's kind of more luck than anything else, or luck in our terms of how we've approached it.
So I have a question for Christina, but I'd also like to hear from Dan on this. So Christina, you talked about using Sparkle endpoints for doing bulk updates. And that sounds fascinating, but then how does that relate to the Solr index? And as far as doing bulk updates in that respect, and I guess what I'm thinking of is, this might go too far off on a tangent, but the assumption would be that you have a single Solr index that you're both writing and reading to. So in a bulk sort of situation, it sounds like you'd really have to go into a case where you would have an index just for writing, and then the public access view would be one that was read-only because of all of these transactions. But
yeah,
I know that's going off on a tangent. But
No, it's fine. So the batch updating I'm doing is the Sparkle update endpoint that's the Fedora REST API. So I'm not touching the Solr instance at all. I'll sometimes use Solr. I'll sometimes run queries against Solr just to check that things are going through the Solr process the way I expect them to. But I'm querying and doing my updates directly on the Fedora REST endpoint, which supports Sparkle update patch. Yeah, Sparkle update / HTTP patch. Because the Fedora endpoint, the Fedora API doesn't support a Sparkle query endpoint, I've had to get pretty creative in pulling the data out from Fedora to like dereferencing URIs in Fedora to be able to do the assessment to figure out which URIs there are that I actually need to update. And that's where my really duct taped together Python RDF lib scripts come in. So I'm not touching the Solr index at all. I do the updates in Fedora, and then whenever the Solarizer, whatever that's set up to run and update, it just pulls the new data from Fedora and updates the Solr index.
Okay. Yeah, so for us, similarly, we haven't had to set up a read or a read and a write Solr index, I honestly think we've been able to avoid that problem because it's a self-deposit, and it's there aren't many people in there that have so many files in there that they're going to go batch update it, that it's going to bring the system to a crawl at a single time. Where you might have, if it were more of like a library collection or something, with a librarian doing a batch update on metadata, which would probably, be a bit more resource consuming than a user that's going, you know what, actually, these five papers are related to this conference and not this one or something like that. I think it's really just our use case that's kind of benefited us to not have to bump up our resources in terms of IT architecture. We did at one point when we first put it out, we did have a that set up for Solr, and granted this was like Solr 3 something back then. We ended up sort of architected our way into problems because we were trying to have this really advanced system that wasn't necessarily needed in terms of like our users and the demand of what we were doing, and then we were running into problems of like writes not going to the second Solr instance, and all of a sudden we realized we were spending more time debugging our problems than the problem. We were solving a problem that didn't really exist. And since then, we've just decided never to go back because it's never been a resource issue for us.
That's very helpful.
would also have run into problems there because the only place that we put that was in production. So when you, you know, when you don't have those instances exactly in development and staging, you know, everything's great for, you know, your release date, and all of a sudden you release something and testing a couple uploads and, huh, does this look good here? But on this, you know, it doesn't look good over here. And it's like, just another example, right? The more you architect it, then the more you have to do it at every layer too. Otherwise, fun happens on release day. Yay.
Christina, you mentioned earlier about, it sounded like you're talking about doing some metadata audits and things during this process. And it's, so are there, like, I don't know, local profiles or things you can basically like validate your RDF? And wait, this is something I'm not, you know, totally, or not knowledgeable at all about. And I'm not sure, yeah, if there's a way just to say like, yeah, we are using these specific vocabularies, we expect them to be used this way, and you can then, you know, run tests in your metadata that way to see if it actually adhere to what your local profile really is.
So we don't have validation. We don't have validation right now. I'm following the Shackle discussions with interest to see what comes out of that, because it'd be really great to have validation. That said, since this is a migration process, we do try to set up the active Fedora models that we use for getting the stuff from DLXS and ingesting into Fedora and interacting with them via Fedora. We try to get those set up in such a way that they would check for some of the bare bones restrictions of the data going in, of the metadata going in. These would be things like there should only be one title, and if there is more than one title, it really should go an alternative title, or a date should be of this type, you know, it should be encoded as a date or stuff like that. But it's pretty bare bones, and I try not to push too much of the application profile validation into Active Fedora, because I know we can do it, but I also know that like that's our Ruby developer's domain, and that's what he needs to do to like, that's what he needs to work on to get the ingest working. So I don't want to go in and hang a whole new like set of requirements on it. That said, I do assessment quite often on the metadata going into Fedora, and this is again where I'm sort of treating the named graph for HydraWorks or what will become just PCDM objects, but whatever. PCDM objects at a certain level. I'm sort of treating those as records and pulling out predicate assessment based off those, again, with duct tape together Python scripts and some of the, like, leveraging some of the stuff that's been done by Mark Phillips for doing assessment on XML collections. And this allows me to look really quickly and see that this predicate's getting used this many times on things that are classified as books. Here are the different values. That looks like what they should be, et cetera. So nothing formalized, but lots of scripts I'm happy to share.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, no, that'll be, I think, something we'll definitely have to, you know, be thinking more about if, you know, as we're seriously considering using RDF for descriptive metadata.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm really hoping that the Shackle recommendations provide something we can do for more programmatic validation. Because I would love to have that programmatic validation built into various parts of the stack.
Yeah, the editing interface. Yeah.
Like the editing interface. Well, the editing interface, there's a lot of stuff I'd love to see built into that. I'm more worried about the editing interface for self-deposit platforms. So when and if we move our institutional repositories to Sophia 7, that's when I'm going to try to jump into that a little bit more actively with the manual editor. But it would be great to have some sort of RDF validation to run almost as like a unit test as things like once it gets into Solarizer, it becomes Solar. Like, can we check it there? Can we say this is missing a format? This is the title came through empty or whatever. But that's blue sky. That's blue sky vision.
Let's make it so. I hope it works.
I wonder if you could talk about how tightly or loosely bound RDF and PCDM are to one another.
Okay. Dan, you don't want to take this one, do you? No. So you don't have to use PCDM to use Fedora 4. You don't have to use PCDM to use RDF. You could go with any sort of number of other schema. And if I remember correctly, Scholar Sphere is using Fedora 4, but is not using PCDM. Is that right? That's okay. Yeah. And I think that's what the Virginia Tech Sophia 6 instance that they just sent out. I think that's using Fedora 4, but it's not using PCDM. So you can totally use whatever model you want, as long as it's RDF, or I'm sure there's like ways around it, even if you didn't want to. But for us, it was jumping onto that community discussion and trying to figure out how we could use PCDM so that eventually works in our Sophia 7 repositories would integrate nicely with works in our digital collections repositories, and we would know that PCDM works, or PCDM works works, or objects. And I'll explain why I keep changing on that. But the objects we would know then could link very easily to whatever we're using in other systems. It's just a mapping, making it more consistent for the sake of mapping across platforms. And we feel like PCDM is, it's not perfect. It still needs some work, but for that role, it was probably the best option for us at the time, instead of trying to build something that would have been entirely local, some model that would have been entirely local and then migrating later on. That said, the reason I keep waffling on PCDM, PCDM works, works versus objects, is that PCDM, just in the last 2 weeks, there have been some proposals to change it based off of discussions around Hydra in a box models and use cases. And it's going to bring in, so Hydra works, or PCDM works, sort of extended PCDM with some expected behaviors from certain classes of objects. So a file set should only contain files. Makes sense. Works should be contained in collections and can contain other works and can contain other file sets. So some sort of like application profile sort of restrictions. Some of the work from that is now being fed back into the PCDM model. File sets is one of the things that's been proposed, that we take it out of HydraWorks and go ahead and add it to PCDM. And we're just trying to follow that and make sure that what we're doing lines up. So that's why I keep waffling on it, because just as of last week, there was some pretty big changes requested in PCDM. And I feel like the next couple of months, maybe even the next year, we're still going to see a series of big changes requested for PCDM. That said, we still thought it was the best way to go for the sake of being able to have our models be interoperable in some way. First, it just needs to be consistent. I don't know if that answered your question, but basically it's you can use whatever you want in Fedora 4.
And I mean, even in Fedora, in 3, we were, I agree completely. And just to add on, I mean, in Fedora 3, when we first put Scholar Sphere out, we were using our descriptive metadata was in RDF. So, and we're not on PCDM right now. We're on basically the same data model that we've always used with Scholar Sphere and Sophia, which is the generic files and collections and stuff. So, I mean, I would say they're... Agreed.
Just to throw that out there, something I've liked seeing from the community around PCDM and more of around HydraWorks as of late is how to leverage some of the mapping and modeling done in DPLA and Europeana in those models. So it's not a one-to-one match necessarily, the DPLA model to what you would do in PCDM. But I do like that those sort of, what have we learned from Europeana and how can we reuse some of that in PCDM? I like that that's starting to pop up a bit now as well. Just to throw that out there.
I'm looking at the time and we got about 5 minutes left. So Does anybody have any parting questions? Yeah, silence means no. Yeah, so I guess we can wrap up. I just have to say I really appreciate both of you coming out and talking to us today. It's been very informative, very helpful.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, no, it was also, I appreciated listening to what Christina had to say too.
I was about to say the same thing. Yeah, thanks for having us. Sometimes you feel like you're working in a isolation on these things, so it's nice to talk to other people
about it. Absolutely. Good luck with your Copenhagen talk.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, watch the Twitter sphere. If like people start really, really complaining about PC, that's my fault.
Fair enough. All right.
Yeah, well, thanks.
See you.
Thank